girls who are dad deprived. Both the girls and boys do worse in about 50 different areas. Some of those areas are a little bit different. Girls tend to do worse in relationship with boys and are much more likely to become pregnant and out of wedlock as teenagers, because without the connection with dad and the roughhousing with dad and things like that, they don't really know how to handle men or understand men. And men are just sort of like straw people. And so a girl gets into her first relationship with a boy at the age of 14 or 13, whatever, and the boy wants her to go further than she's comfortable with, but she goes further because she's afraid that if she doesn't, some other girl will. And she, you know, she doesn't know other ways of being able to make herself of value to a boy, how to hear him, how to listen to him, how to be empathetic with him, how to support him emotionally, which boys need enormous amounts of because they don't have that from other boys. And so without that knowledge, she tends to be sexual before she's comfortable. And then that often gets her into situations like being left by a guy that really isn't that interested in her, because she hasn't developed the type of emotional base of connection with that guy. When she does develop an emotional basis of connection with that guy, by the way, and a male and a female in their teenage years or later break up from a long-term meaningful relationship, it is actually the boy that suffers significantly more than the girl, much more likely to get depressed, much more likely to go into a suicidal mode, much more likely to become alienated and feel like rejected and not know how to handle that rejection because he doesn't have the emotional tools that girls are more likely to go to. Girls are more likely to go to another girl and say, you know, Jimmy, you know, dumped me. He didn't call back last night. And all the girls will agree that he's a jerk and, you know, she's better off without him. Whereas guys will just sort of like, well, what did you do wrong? What do you do differently? They'll confront the guy. And the guy will feel like he doesn't have any support system. And so that's a little bit of the example. But girls after divorce, the daughters of divorce, don't do as badly as a result of dad deprivation as boys do, because at least the girl has a same gender role model. And girls are given much more permission to share their feelings, their fears, their hurts, their pains, via tears. And when a girl sheds tears, a young girl sheds tears, we all have a protective instinct, mother, father, and female peers and male peers, to protect any girl that cries. That's deep inside of us. And so the girl is much more likely to feel heard, feel community when things are tough. So, for example, in college, 75% of the people that see a college counselor report suicidal ideations are females. But 75% of the people who commit suicide in college are males. And so so we have 50 some odd areas where girls do worse than boys do. I'm sorry, girls do worse after divorce when they don't have a father. And about 50 some plus, more like 70 areas of problems that boys tend to have. The difference is that the boys' problems are much more intense, much more likely to lead to suicide, to drugs, to really dangerous behavior, or to crimes. So 93% of our prison population are males, but 90% of those males are dad deprived males. Our mass shooters are almost all males, but the great majority of them, about 80%, are dad deprived males. Our ISIS recruits are mostly males, but the great majority of the ISIS recruits who are males are dad-deprived males. And by the way, the smaller percentage of ISIS recruits who are females are dad-deprived females for the most part. And so it gives you a sense of the enormous impact of dad deprivation. And one of the reasons I'm working with the White House on this issue now is I've been able to say to the White House, you know, this is costing us at least $1 trillion a year to repair the damages of ISIS, of mass shootings, to say nothing of the emotional insecurities and scars that our nation is left with from fearing that when our children go to school, they're not necessarily safe, but they could be subjected to some type of school shooting, or if somebody does a really nasty bunch of texts or tweets to our daughter or son, that may signal some danger in the community. And so, and the White House has listened. I have to say that Republicans, as a rule, understand the value of fathers and family more than the Democrats that I've approached have. And I've chaired this coalition to create a White House Council on Boys and Men. And that coalition has approached seven of the Democratic candidates. Actually, it's approached all of the Democratic candidates, but only seven responded. I interviewed all seven, tried to get them on board in relation to creating a White House Council on Boys and Men or paying attention to boys' issues. And just in the last debate, Andrew Yang did bring that up for the first time in all of the debates.
Well, it's such an important issue. You know, in my head and in a lot of people's head, somebody who would join ISIS, you think would have some radical weirdo dad that encouraged them to do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of what's in the stereotype. Not that he just didn't have a dad at all and they're looking for that leadership. You know, it's interesting that the Democrats, you said that you, when you were with Now, you could get these speaking gigs, you're getting paid all this money, and then you started focusing on the boy issue and it all dried up. And it's really sad because we can't look at a thing and say, okay, women were discriminated against and treated like crap, right? But why do we have to treat another group or ignore and not prioritize another group in order for this group to be treated well? Why can't both be treated well? Why can't we figure out what works good for both of them to prosper? I mean, that's what we're lacking. Yes. And why have we gotten to a point where just even talking about boys' rights makes you a sexist? I mean, I love my husband and my son and my dad too much for that to be true, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Well, here's where I'm including myself here, and other feminists made our mistake. And part of the mistake was somewhat innocent, part not. So the innocent part of the mistake is that we had evolved through two hierarchies prior to the women's movement. The first hierarchy was the hierarchy of blacks, whites as the oppressors and blacks as the oppressed. And that hierarchy had a lot of validity to it, obviously, the slave owners and the slaves. And so that sort of hierarchy of oppressor-oppressed had taken over the cultural understanding of how to create a revolution, make sure the oppressed become equal to the oppressors. Then we moved to the next layer, which was the civil rights movement. Feminism. And feminism was based to a large degree, the radical feminists were mostly Marxist and Leninists. And Lenin and Marx believed that there was an oppressor group, the rich, and the oppressed, the ones that didn't make as much money. Then we got to the gender groups. The more mainstream media and political movements started taking over from that and saying, okay, men are the ones who earn more money, therefore they must be the oppressors. Women are the ones earning less money, they must be the oppressed. They completely misunderstood what was happening with men and women. So in every university now, there's gender studies courses. And statement number one in gender course number 101 is that we live in a world dominated by a patriarchy in which men made the rules to benefit men at the expense of women. That's where we went wrong. What we lived in was a world dominated by the need to survive. And in order to survive, most cultures developed roles that men had and women had that restricted both sexes. Women were expected to raise the children. Men were expected to raise the money. Women were expected to raise the children in one way, and men were expected to get the food in another way.
Can I push back a little bit, though? Because
yes, sure.
Even though that's true, you can't argue that, there was an oppressive layer that was put on top of women that they weren't allowed to do anything else, and men had a little more flexibility. As rigid as it was, they still had more flexibility, and women couldn't do even basic things like do business or do, I mean, they were very oppressed. They were property in a lot of countries. So, and they were kept out of any kind of decision making at all that was, you know, that involved them or their family. They didn't have rights for their children. They couldn't own property. So even though what you're saying is absolutely correct, there was still an oppressive layer on it. Now, if you look at the Indian community, like American Indians, you know, the Native Americans, they're almost a perfect model of how they worked in harmony with each other. And that was different than the Western model or some of these other countries. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, and I have another way of looking at that. I definitely agree. I mean, I was part of the feminist movement because I wanted, I saw my own mother not having, she when I applied to graduate school and she said, she started crying and I said, "What's happening?" And she said, "Well, I just am so sad that, when I got a scholarship to Cornell, I didn't take that scholarship to Cornell because it wasn't big enough to pay all the bills, and I wanted to be able to work and save money to marry my, to find a man, because that was the thing that you did in those days, which is you found a man to be able to support you, and she was attractive, and so she used, but that was the so the feminist movement said, no, you can be something other than a woman who finds a man, and so." So I was, yes, because I could see the pain that my mother went through and how she didn't make use of her talents and how sad she felt when here I was, getting a master's degree and then a doctorate. And I probably was not as smart as she was. And still, and she saw and felt that difference. And so that's why I supported and support the feminist movement expanding options for women. But what we missed in the process was this. Historically speaking, in recent history, men have not made more than women for the same work. What's true is that dads have made more than moms, because when dads and moms got married and had children, dads gave up what they wanted to do very typically, if they were a musician or a teacher, elementary school teacher, and there were four or five children coming into the family, and they knew that elementary school teaching could not produce, could not support the family in the way they wanted to support the family, and the way the mother wanted them to support the family and get them into a good neighborhood, etc. The fathers gave up what they loved to do because what's fulfilling and what dads love to do, like be a musician or a teacher or an artist or a writer, usually pays less. Fulfilling occupations pay less. So men often gave up fulfillment to do what they needed to do, like selling insurance. And that selling of insurance, when they had three or four children, they started having to take over national responsibilities. And so, as opposed to just local responsibilities. So the father's catch-22 was often learning to love the family by being away from the love of the family. And that oppressed men because the oppression of men was preventing them from having fulfilling work because they needed to do work that was less fulfilling in order to earn more so that the rest of the family could be fulfilled. Or alternatively, every generation had its war. And when the Nazis were threatening us, or in World War I, it was everybody made clear to a boy, if you want to become a real man, you need to become disposable. You need to become disposable in that war. Disposability and sacrifice in a war, or disposability and sacrifice in a hazardous job in order to make a living, if you don't have a lot of education, or the expectation on you to earn more money climbing some ladder, to sell some product that you don't love, because it gives you more status and reputation and makes you feel like you're a successful man. Those are the types of male oppressions, the male expectation that to think of power as feeling obligated to earn money that somebody else spends while he dies sooner, and to not have
It's awful.
the
It's awful. This
yes.
is such an important topic. And I don't want to interrupt you because my listeners will just like yell at me because you were just on a roll here. But what I got to say is that I think that in some ways, all that did was involve more women to be oppressed. Like I not it, to join the ranks of men to be treated like crap is what I'm trying to say. And I'm hoping women can wake up and realize, oh my God, this is what men had to deal with. I've kind of done a 180 when it came to war. You know, I always used to say women should have the right to fight because we should have the right to fight for our own freedom. Don't take the right away from me to fight for my freedom. Do you know what I mean? I think that's a fundamental right. But now that I understand why we go to wars, and that you're just being trained to be disposable, I've kind of, stepped it back a bit and go, well, wait a minute here. I don't know if anybody should have to go to war for that reason. It's one thing if we're defending ourselves. Yeah. It's another thing. And so now all these men have been, corralled into this thing. I totally understand what you're saying. It's really profound. And I've been thinking about this for a while. And that's why men are pushing back. They're thrashing. I don't think they're thrashing necessarily in a productive, constructive way. I think a lot of them are thrashing back, maybe like the women's movement in some of these colleges and universities are thrashing back and just ripping apart men. Instead of being constructive, I think they're ripping apart women. Women aren't as good in sports, so we shouldn't have to watch them. Women aren't whatever, whatever they do to rip each other apart instead of being constructive.
Yes,
and
yes.
You
First of all,
are absolutely perfect on this.
Thank you. For me, one thing I do couples communication courses around the country is that I feel that even more important than what I talk about in the boy crisis is that, the boy crisis emanates from oftentimes divorces. Divorces emanate very frequently from the Achilles heel of all human beings. And the Achilles heel of all human beings is our inability to handle personal criticism without becoming defensive. And training people to be able to handle their partner's personal criticism without becoming defensive and providing a safe environment for their partner to express their concerns, their fears, and their feelings is the core skill that will keep marriages together, not by law, not by requirement, not by guilt because they don't want to break apart, not so that, that many times marriages that where marriages are legally together, they're psychologically divorced, or the mother and father are living in minimum security prison marriages. I don't want marriages like that. I want marriages where both parents feel like I really understand why my husband's doing that roughhousing in a way that is helping the child, but my husband doesn't articulate that. Let me, though, provide a safe environment for him to at least try to get a hold of what's happening here that's positive for the children. And so these types of listening skills are what is most needed to be taught, not only in the family, but part of what I'm suggesting to the White House is that we have every parent have a free access in their community by their faith-based organizations or what other organizations, their wives, their boys clubs or boys-girls clubs or whatever, to have parent communication training. And that every child, boy and girl, have the opportunity to learn in first, second, and third grade, not just reading, writing, arithmetic, but listening skills, where they are able to hear and draw out each other's story. Because when in Denmark they did this, the bullying stopped a great deal. Bullies don't bully people who they understand and they feel empathy for. That empathy development has to happen at a very early age, especially in boys, because boys are often get rewarded for showing themselves to be able to be stronger than another boy rather than to have the courage to listen to somebody else besides themselves.
Well, this is just great. You're a very unique individual to understand the feminist movement and really understand men. So you're able to kind of connect it all together. What are you specifically working on with the White House?
A number of things. One is a father, and again, let me make it clear, I've had four meetings with the White House, and these are all things that some of which they will definitely be bringing up, they say. The boy crisis is a major issue next year, early next year. But exactly how they approach it and what they include and don't include is still in discussion. And so one of the things I'm suggesting is that there be a father warrior training that we say, boys, you don't have the sense of purpose of going to war and killing other people on the killing fields. So let's train boys to know how to love at home and love and be loved rather than kill and be killed. And so that that you are needed as a father. Here is why. Here is when you say, yes, I want my children to take more risks. no, I don't want to just take Johnny and Jane out of Mrs. Mrs. Smith's class because they don't get along. I want my children to learn how to get along with Mrs. Smith rather than just go out of the class. These are things that dads are more likely to contribute. But when dads don't feel understood, they just withdraw and they start focusing on earning money because that's the one thing they're appreciated for. And so this is the type of thing that I'm saying to the Trump administration. This type of father warrior training needs to happen. Parent communication, child communication needs to happen. We need to have a male teacher corps to give scholarships to male teachers who commit to working at least 2 years as elementary school teachers in schools that have less than 50% elementary school teachers, which is just about 100% of schools. And so until the number of elementary school teachers are about half men and half women, especially in inner cities, where there's a disproportionate number of boys and girls being brought up by single mothers, and those boys tend to go from single mother homes to almost all female teacher schools. And so that's where the boys get in trouble. So I'm suggesting a large number of programs like this. I'm basically saying that we can't have a system. We in order to fulfill the promise of no child left behind, we have to also make sure that no parent is left behind, because we now have the data to know that children do best with both parents, that that the best parent is both parents, and that we have to have no parent left behind. And yes, moms, and I'm saying to Democrats, that it is not okay to say that you're right, your body, your choice means my child, I do what I want to with my child. The moment you make a free choice to have a child, you make a choice that is free, that you've made to put your child's needs and future in front of yours, in front of your personal freedom. And that's a
Absolutely.
choice.
You're free
Yes.
to decide to get pregnant, but once you do, now you're suddenly in a different role. And
Yeah.
it's just about being responsible. Responsibility is a huge part of freedom. And that's what
Absolutely.
everybody's missing. And also, standing up for men's rights doesn't mean you're sexist, and vice versa. I want to be free, I want to be independent, but that doesn't mean I don't care about men. I mean, we need to
Yes.
evolve and be way more mature on this and realize that I'm important as a woman, but that doesn't mean you're not important as a man, and that we can't beat each other up, and or one doesn't have to be superior to the other for us to thrive. Period.
Precisely. We are all in the same family boat. And when only one sex wins, both sexes lose. I have two daughters. I want my daughters to have available to them good, mature men. When there's a boy crisis, there is a girl crisis. And then girls are put into positions where they feel like, my goodness, I don't find a male that I really love, that is really mature, that is really capable of taking responsibility. Those are in short supply. I'm not super attractive. I can't get a man like that, or I don't feel I can. I don't want to settle and compromise. And so if we have a short supply of emotionally intelligent boys and men, we're going to have a short supply of that for girls and women, and then girls and women will be having children without being married. 53% of women who are under 30 who have children without being married, and those children either don't know who their father is, have had minimal contact with their fathers, or even when the mother and father have lived in the same home when the child was born, the father and mother stay together for only about 4 years on average. And so that child usually ends up with the mother and not the and has minimal or no contact with the father, has developed an attachment to the father, then feels abandoned by the father. And that feels really, and the father often feels like he's been disconnected from the investment in the children, because when men and women are separated, fathers have a need for emotional connection. And so men fight for the right to be with their children after a divorce or after a separation, because that's everything that counts for men, because men are deprived and because of their socialization of the emotional contact and all the joy that that brings. And so when there is a separation of mothers and fathers, it's usually the father that really feels deeply hurt by the loss of the connection to the children that he feels are really want him, need him, and love him.
Well, this is just wonderful. We definitely have a crisis. I see the anxiety levels in kids. I taught the University of Minnesota for 5 years, and I was shocked at how these kids, their anxiety levels, their depression levels, it's off the charts. And this is such a core fundamental issue. It's so important. And I thank you that you're championing this and that you've taken a financial loss to do what's right. I mean, I think we all feel that. And I just really hope that this takes hold in our society. It's just so important. Where can people get information about you and what you're working on and a copy of your book?
Yes, if you do the Boy Crisis and just go to Amazon, for example, they have a sale on the paperback version now. So that's the least expensive way to get the print version. However, I'm getting as much feedback, positive feedback about the Audible version. A lot of people working out of the gym or who have commutes listen to the Audible version. I spend 5 days reading the book in my own voice, and John Gray read the portion of the book that he wrote. John Gray is the author of The Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, and he wrote five extraordinary chapters on ADHD and the ways to treat reverse ADHD without using drugs that he's very passionately connected to. And so he read his portions directly as well. So if you're inclined to learn by reading, then the paperback version is the least expensive way. And if you have a little bit more income, I really would encourage you to support the local bookstore and getting The Boy Crisis from them.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And keep being you and doing everything you're doing. We are blessed to have you.
Thank you so much, Sarah. It's just a pleasure talking with you. I love the way you ask questions and then listen to me roll on with an answer that probably is uncommonly, hopefully in depth, but also sometimes in detail.
That's great. It was great. So thank you so much.
Thank you.